I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple. Today, we're talking about newcomers to Canada. When you're making a move to a new country, there is a lot of information out there, different resources to help you settle, and given what we focus on, help you settle in financially. It is not an easy path to navigate, though. And so we're going to look at a nonprofit this week. They're called Peace Geeks. They have developed an app to help newcomers with their financial progress. We'll speak with CEO Jennifer Freeman for more on how the app works. Then a tool to help us better understand what it's like living in poverty in Canada. United Way Simcoe Muskoka, in partnership with Rocket Innovation, developed something called the Living in My Shoes Anti-Poverty Simulator. It's really cool. We're going to talk to the Chief Executive and Philanthropy Officer at United Way Simcoe Muskoka. Brian Shelley's his name, and he's going to talk about some of the different scenarios that you can learn from in the tool. Plus, how much does it cost to own a car in Canada? It is not cheap. Matt Hands, VP of Insurance at RateHub.ca, comes with the total and also the breakdown on the various expenses you will likely incur, including, no surprise, auto insurance premiums. Plus, we'll speak with Julia Carpenter and Bu-Ray Lam, co-authors of The New Rules of Money. It's a book from the Wall Street Journal. And one of my favorite parts is how they each spend their financial self-care day. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. You have probably heard the expression, walk a mile in someone else's shoes. Great in theory, difficult to do in practice. That is the purpose, though, of a new simulator that comes from the United Way Simcoe Muskoka. They have created this really cool tool that will help you see the circumstances that people living in poverty deal with and the choices that they are forced to make. This was developed in partnership with Rocket Innovation, and the CEO of United Way Simcoe Muskoka joins us now. His name is Brian Shelley, and he's in Barrie, Ontario. Hello there.
Hi, how are you doing today, Bruce?
I am well. So I have gone through your simulation. I learned a bunch of things. Before we get to my experience, I want you to give us some background here on what the problem was that you were trying to solve.
Yeah, so I think that poverty is a difficult concept to understand if you haven't lived it. You know, I think we've all heard people say, you know, if someone had only tried harder, or, you know, I was able to get a job, or I'm able to, you know, pay my rent or pay my mortgage, why can't they? And I think until you've lived it, it's really hard to grasp the level of anxiety and fatigue that comes with making micro decisions that many of us take for granted when you're living not just week to week, but day to day. You're totally in survival mode. And so the idea of creating the simulator was to help folks understand what their friends and neighbors and family members may be experiencing.
You have a number of scenarios. The path that I followed was a single mother named Amari.
Yes.
Tell us about what a participant in the tool would learn about her circumstances and the choices you would be required to make as you put yourself in her shoes.
Yeah, if I recall right, Amari is a single mom. She's taking a course to further herself, to get further ahead in her career. And she's working a job, and she's got a child, children in care, and one of the children are sick. And so she has to go pick up the kid. And she doesn't have reliable transportation, so she has a choice to either go by foot or go by bus. If she goes by bus, it costs money. If she goes by foot, she's going to be late for an appointment. And it's just this staggering of again, these are micro inconveniences to most of us. But what it ends up to is, at the end of the day, because of a child who's sick at school and Amari has to go pick up the child and ultimately get her home or get her to the grandparents, she's going without, right? She won't have enough dollars left in the bank account at the end of the week to feed the family or to pay the rent or to pay the bills. And what we know factually is that people will pay what they have to pay, right? You have to pay your rent. You have to pay your hydro bill. If you don't pay those things, you're on the risk of living on someone's couch or in the back of someone's car or or simply going homeless, right? So families go without. They go without food. They go without proper clothing. They go without what many of us take for granted.
As a kid of a certain age, I am very familiar with the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Yeah. I used to love those books. Yeah. In Amari's case, we were asked to choose this adventure. And so one of the choice points was, which courses would you like to register in? I chose two, and the simulator showed that actually, those were only available when Amari was at work. So she would lose money because she couldn't be at work during those times. Would I like to change my selection? I changed my selection, but of course, it wouldn't have occurred to me that the course selection would be so inextricably linked to income. The other example, which was really amazing, was on the choice of bus versus walk, that on the walking option, there aren't sidewalks all the way. So I think what's really powerful about the tool is the level of specificity on these choices that you're required to make as you walk through it. What informed the design of that? How did you make that come alive in the way that you did?
Yeah, so we had really great partners at Rocket Innovation, and they really designed the platform. And then we ourselves as community connectors within the charitable sector in Simcoe Muskoka, we worked really hard with our partners who work with folks who are experiencing these scenarios day in, day out, to really rely on real life experience. So this isn't made up. This isn't a game. This is based on the realities of someone living in our region, the challenge that they would have to make based on the bus schedules that we have available, based on post-secondary education opportunities, based on childcare opportunities, based on all of these scenarios. And so to this end, we were able to rely on our own connection to the community and on the other end, rely on our partners at Rocket Innovation.
So a participant engages in the tool, they look at these various scenarios. What would you like people to then go and do?
Right. So I think we've looked at this as, I think there's three possible outcomes out of this. Number one, absolutely, we've developed this as a tool to help our donors understand why their charitable gifts are needed, right? Why now more than ever, or certainly in the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years, charities need support from folks so that we can help folks like Amari navigate systems that seemingly are stacked against them. Number two, we want to use this from an advocacy perspective to help decision makers, to help policymakers understand. Because again, unless you, pardon what the pun, but unless you've walked a mile in shoes, you don't know. And you don't know what you don't know. And so we need decision makers to be empathetic and to better understand the challenges that are systemically in place. And thirdly, it's about creating some understanding for everyone. Whether or not you choose to donate to a charity like the United Way, whether or not you have the power to make policy decisions, we all have the power to smile. We all have the power within us to treat people with kindness. And I think kindness goes a long way. I bumped into a gentleman who was panhandling outside of a store about a year ago. I flipped him a toonie. He looked me in the eye and he said, "Thank you. Not only the first person that has given me any money, you're the first person who's actually looked at me in the eyes and asked me how the days go." That was pretty powerful for me.
Yeah.
And I think that whether or not we all have the capacity, many of us don't have the capacity to give right now, but we all have the capacity to give kindness. And really, that's my hope, is that through this tool, we can help spread some kindness and understanding in the community.
That's great. In this on this show, we talk about personal finance. And one of the things that I think the tool does really effectively is highlight some of the very tough choices that people who are living close to the line are forced to make about taking a kid to the doctor versus working a shift. I chose to take the kid to the doctor, and the result of the doctor's visit was that it wasn't an acute issue. But I can't even wrap my mind around the challenge of having to determine whether or not to miss a shift, because in the case of our archetype here, that meant she might not be able to pay her rent. How do you make those calls?
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that Amari has a job. Right. But right now, the gap between a living wage in Simcoe Muskoka and minimum wage is the difference of $16 and change and $22 and change. That means every week, people in a minimum, you're earning a minimum wage, and let's assume that Amari is making close to minimum wage, are falling behind about $240 a week, which comes out to about $1,000 a month, which means over the course of a year, $12,000 a year. They're $12,000 a year really of being able to keep their head above water and provide for their family. And I think that that's a piece that is sometimes lost on all of us, that that just because you have a job doesn't mean that you can actually afford to live and provide for your family.
For those interested in participating in that simulation, where do they find it?
uwsimcomuskoka.ca.
It's worth the time. I have to go out and go back and check out the two scenarios that I didn't walk all the way through. A choose your own adventure, but a sobering one. Brian, thank you for your time today.
Bruce, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Brian Shelley is the Chief Executive and Philanthropy Officer at United Way Simcoe Muskoka, and he was here to talk about something called their Poverty Simulator. Coming up next on Moolala, an app for newcomers that has a whole bunch of resources that will help them settle in financially. Jennifer Freeman is the CEO of Peace Geeks, and she's going to be here to talk more about Welcome to Canada. And later, I will speak with Matt Hands. He is VP of Insurance at RateHub.ca about how much, on average, it costs to own a car in Canada. If you don't want to wait an entire week to listen to another episode of the show, you can listen to Moolala anytime on any of the podcast platforms that you frequent. So Apple Music, Spotify, wherever. You can also listen by going to moolala.ca. You can do that at your desktop, your laptop, on your phone. And when you're over there at moolala.ca, you can search by topic or title of segment. Moolala Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. Newcomers to Canada face just a ton of complexity and lots of hurdles in almost every area of their life, personal finance included. We've discussed lots of them on this show before: how to access credit, how to find a job, how to navigate the high cost of virtually everything. And there are lots of resources out there for newcomers. It's not enough, but some. There's one that we haven't talked about, and it comes from a nonprofit called Peace Geeks. It's called the Welcome to Canada app, and we're going to focus on what it does, what it makes available for newcomers to this country. Joining us from Vancouver is Jennifer Freeman. She is the CEO of Peace Geeks. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
So tell me about the app. What does it do?
So the Welcome to Canada app is a free multilingual mobile application that newcomers can download even before they arrive in Canada to help them navigate their journeys. They can find out about everything from the climate and walkability of various cities that they're considered moving to, all the way down to learning about our education system, our banking system, and how to find a job once they get here.
All of that information is available somewhere. If you spend enough time Googling things, you can find out how many days of sunshine Calgary has, but it isn't in one place. How long did it take to consolidate all of that and to produce something that would be relevant through the lens of someone who's looking to move here?
Well, you're absolutely right. All of that information is available, but you have to know A, where to find it, and B, that the information exists. So one of the problems that we were trying to solve by creating Welcome to Canada was also answering the unknown unknown. So I don't know if you've ever moved to another country before, but you come with a framework based on where you grew up, what you know, what laws you know, what systems you know. And a lot of times when you're making the courageous move to go to an entirely new country, oftentimes that may have an entirely different language than maybe you grew up speaking. You're having to figure out that system and you're relating it unconsciously to the system you came from. So what we were trying to do with Welcome to Canada was start from the place of what you know, which is yourself. Ask people about their circumstances, what it is that they're looking for, whether or not they have children or a partner or people that they're caring for in their family. And then from that point, let them know what they can find out in Canada, what kinds of free information and services are available to them, what kind of information can help them in their particular circumstances hit the ground running a lot.
So you're aiming to customize the journey so that they're not looking at 15,000 different websites, but they're looking at ones that are targeted to their circumstances when they arrive.
Yes. Make it simple and easy and personalizable so that they can find out exactly what they need to know, not become overwhelmed and not get lost in a lot of the misinformation that's available out there.
Why you? Why Peace Geeks? I mean, I can see this being of great interest to the federal government. I can see this being of great interest to the banks. Why you?
Well, we are, for the most part, over 85% of us are newcomers or immigrants, first or second generation to Canada. Most of us have lived all over the world and we're all developers and designers. And we had lived this problem. We knew that it was a problem for people who were moving to Canada, just like it is for moving to any other country. And being technologists, we thought that technology could have an incredible role using the device that most newcomers are most likely to have, which is a mobile phone. And provide that information in the palm of people's hands so that they don't have to struggle for as long as so many people are doing.
How do you address the absence of trust that a newcomer should have in the financial aspect? And I say that because depending on the cultural context where they come from, they may be very familiar with traditional banks. They may be less familiar with traditional banks. They may transact exclusively in cash. They may not. There's a whole bunch of things they don't know. And it will require for them to come here and function. They're going to have to build trust in the institutions that a Canadian who's lived here for generations knows, yeah, CRA, it's who collects the taxes, no big deal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Bruce. And again, that's something that we actually found out from the very moment we were developing the app. We developed it with a number of Syrian friends and colleagues and individuals because the app was developed in 2017 to 2019 in the midst of the Syrian crisis. And our friends and colleagues who were co-designing the app with us came from, like you said, a very low level of trust, not only in banking systems, but also in government institutions overall. And that's a situation that is mirrored all across the world, unfortunately. So some of the things that we do to build trust is, first of all, we vet all of the information that we have. You asked me earlier how we get that information. We get it from verified, reliable sources. And then our app, thank goodness, has been spread mainly through word of mouth. It's newcomers using it, finding it accurate, finding it to be non-biased, finding it to have other newcomers contributing to, hey, this you know, service really worked for me. This is a bank, this is an institution, this is information that you can really trust and use. They provide, you know, reviews on the Apple Android web stores for us, the Play stores for us. They tell their friends, they tell their families. And fortunately, we've been able to build a reputation as an agnostic kind of aggregator and provider of that information. And the fact that it's built by immigrants and newcomers for immigrants and newcomers, I think really serves the app well, gets it out into more people's hands.
I heard about it because I saw the relationship that you have announced with the Bank of Montreal. Tell us about that relationship and what that provides for you and what it provides for users.
Yeah, well, it's really great. I mean, like I said, we want to provide accurate, up-to-date information that is tailored specifically for newcomers. And the partnership that we have with the Bank of Montreal is leveraging the information and resources that their New to Canada team has developed specifically for newcomers, not only on the Bank of Montreal services, but on banking and credit in general. And providing, you know, one of the oldest banks in Canada, one of the most established ones, information and resources so that newcomers can trust it. We've been working very closely with their team. We're very careful about who we partner with. We really want to make sure that, you know, Welcome to Canada continues to be a trusted resource for years and years to come. And we were really glad that the information that the Bank of Montreal is providing right now and the services and tools that they are actively developing right now is such a newcomer-centric set of resources. So
we're in a, it seems like a part of the zeitgeist these days, because so many of the banks have a, both a commitment to this because they believe in the importance of newcomers to the future of our country, but also it's getting customers when they arrive, even before they arrive, because that will be a way for them to build a long-term and loyal client base. I want to ask a bit more about the financial functionality. So this is a show about money. What are some of the features or areas that a user could learn about when it comes to how they manage their money?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, some of the pain points that a lot of newcomers face is building their credit when they come to a new country. It is so hard to do simple things like even find an apartment to rent if you can't show what your credit score is. So information and finding connectivity to resources so that newcomers can start building their credit right from the very moment that they land. That's a really accessed resource on the Welcome to Canada page and information. Learning about the banking systems, understanding the difference between, a checking account, a savings account, investments, understanding what the steps are if a newcomer is at a place where they're already looking to get a mortgage, being able to find that information, right, is available right in the app, both the information and then immediate clicks to resources where they can go straight through and say, okay, I'm based in this city. What are some of the resources around me where I can, you know, start doing this right away? And it provides that right in the app. It's not just passive information. It's also the ability to do something with it.
How do you deal with languages? I mean, I can see you as Peace Geeks having it available in a ton of languages. But as soon as you start linking out or rolling things that come from other parts of the web, that seems like just a tremendous amount of complexity.
It is. And so we try to provide as much information in as many languages as we can in different provinces where we have different information. We have information up until 12 different languages, and pretty much all across the country, we've got English and French, Ukrainian and Arabic, and we're always looking to expand further. But you're right. Once people get out into the rest of Canadian society, that language support often decreases. However, we are finding, and when we talk to users constantly as we're developing the app, we find out that people, even for whom English or French is not their first language, a lot of times are setting their phone to English or French because they're trying to learn it, knowing that they're coming to Canada. So it's actually been a really interesting. So then the transition off the app into the greater services that are available in Canada, that shift to find, you know, information in English or French isn't necessarily as huge a leap as we think. Also, there's resources and information in the app on language classes.
Right.
So if somebody's struggling with that barrier, they can find, you know, another resource right there to help them in their journey to learn English or French.
Just one last question. They've got the app, and I can picture someone hungry to find out more. Refugee camps, as you mentioned, many different contexts. People arrive, low income, no income, high income, etc. They all have this insatiable curiosity. What happens when they get here? Do they delete the app from their phone, or do you have something to keep them engaged in those first months and years as they settle?
Well, the app was launched in 2019, and we are continuing to develop new features. And one of the big ones that we're developing right now is a virtual career coach that helps people go from their first kind of survival job all the way through to level up their skills and education, interview skills, language skills, and then continue to apply for jobs and other opportunities as they see fit. So. Whatever it is that we hear from newcomers, that's what we continue to try and develop.
Well done. Thank you for your work on the app, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bruce. I hope it continues to be a resource. People can go and download it at any point on any of the Apple or Android stores. Thank you so much for having me.
Peace Geeks, welcome to Canada. Jennifer Freeman is the CEO of Peace Geeks. Coming up later, breaking down how much it costs to own a car in Canada. Matt Hans from RateHub.ca takes us through that and has some saving tips as well. But first, Julia Carpenter and Bure Lamb tell us about their new book, The New Rules of Money. It comes from the Wall Street Journal. If you want the latest and the greatest that Moolala has to offer, you can sign up for our newsletter. And on that, or in that newsletter, once a month, you'll find links that connect to what we're working on here on SiriusXM, CBC Radio, CityLine, BNN Bloomberg. Lots of tips and tricks to help you get a handle and keep a handle on your money.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
There are countless personal finance books out there. I love them, but there are so many. I've written two, there are a million. But the world is changing, and there are rules that were applied in the past for managing your money that just may not apply now. So how's this for a title? This book is called The New Rules of Money, and it's from two Wall Street Journal journalists. They are Julia Carpenter and Bure Lamb. They join us now from Manhattan. Welcome to you both.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
It is my pleasure. Now, I'll note that both of you are personal finance journalists. You're not financial advisors, so we'll listen to all of your, you know, stories and recommendations with that context. Bure, maybe I'll start with you. Why do we need new rules? What was wrong with the old rules? I like the old rules.
I think some of the old rules, I think that the new generation, and we're talking Gen Z, but also millennials, I think we find some of the old rules a little bit oppressive. I think that the economy has changed. The housing market has changed. Certainly in Toronto, you know, there's been a big run up in real estate prices. I think that the way, you know, single income family households operate has changed. So that's really why we went into the new rules of money. And a big philosophy and premise of the book is that we really believe that learning about your money life and being transparent about your goals and having your own goals and not, you know, your neighbor's goals or your friend's goals, that's really important in a person's financial life. So kind of a more personalized approach to your own financial life, like less one size fits all. And a lot more of working towards the things you want, not just the things that people tell you you're supposed to want.
Julia, the book uses a cooking metaphor. There's illustrations, there's references to financial ingredients, and it is a very high participation read. It's part book, but part workbook too. What were you trying to do with this approach?
One of the things that struck Bure and I both about cookbooks is that they're for everyone. You know, if you're reading something like, one of my favorites is Claire Saffitz's Dessert Person. I love baking. There's a recipe for a chocolate chip cookie in there, but there's also a recipe for a 6-layer cake. Mm. And so the accomplished baker who feels like they kind of know everything, there's something in there for them. And they can learn from reading a chocolate chip cookie recipe in the same way that someone who's never baked on their own before can also learn from reading the chocolate chip cookie recipe. And so often, I think personal finance books are intimidating to people, or they feel facile and maybe even like condescendingly basic to people. So we wanted something that allowed people to get what they needed and was still for everybody.
One of the things that really plays to the zeitgeist is this idea of YOLO. You only live once. I'm a Gen Xer. We didn't have YOLO. It was none of that. You have an exercise in which you help people analyze YOLO events in the past. Julia, tell us how that works and what you were trying to get out of having people do that exercise.
This is easily the page in the book that I've gotten the most reader feedback on. Luckily, most of it positive. But I think for people who know what it's like to purchase something at the checkout or know what it's like to add to cart and run away. And by the way, I'm also one of those people. There is this sense of, okay, well, I'm not going to think about this for 1 second longer than I need to. And what we're encouraging people to do in the book is not to guilt trip yourself or shame yourself, but instead to just be more cognizant of how that purchase feels later. I have an example. Bere's heard me talk about this example, but I have been stocking a particular jumpsuit on all of these different resale websites for years now.
Really?
Yes.
Hey, how much is it?
Okay. So I found it for $100. It was originally like $250. I found it for $100, purchased it immediately. And then when it arrived, I had to sit with it for a little bit, and I've had it now for a handful of weeks. And I was like, you know what? This feels good. This feels good. Like, I purchased this because I like the print and because they don't make it anymore. And I actually feel good about this kind of one. When I purchase something that I have an investment in, like I have in this print for so long, it feels good. What I feel less good about is buying something that I feel sort of peer pressured into or something that I didn't. It's just all about knowing yourself, right? It's about understanding what YOLO purchase feels good to you and what YOLO purchase feels bad to you, and also giving yourself that built-in time mechanism to return to it later and kind of hold yourself accountable.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And the YOLO page is actually something that it's like a micro exercise of something we noticed in our years and years of personal finance reporting. You know, between me and Julia, we've talked to hundreds of people about their financial lives and their purchases, their regrets, their aspirations. And one thing we constantly find, and I actually studied behavioral economics, so this matches up with the research that has been done on this, which is people have a really hard time aligning their short-term goals with their long-term goals. Mm-hmm. And this is especially true when it comes to money. People want to live for today and not for tomorrow, but yet they still want to see, you know, they still feel bad when they are not reaching how much you're supposed to have saved in your retirement accounts. So part of this YOLO exercise is to reconcile the long-term with the short-term. We all make these really short-term purchases and decisions that are spur of the moment. And what you need to learn about yourself is, like, are those decisions mostly right for you, like Julia described with the jumpsuit, or are they not right for you and they don't bring you long-term satisfaction? Because I think it's okay to spend money. We're not telling you not to spend your hard-earned money. Like, that's part of what's so great about payday. But you have to learn, are you the kind of person who will buy a pair of shoes at the drop of a hat and, like, really make a good decision about whether that pair of shoes is going to sit in the closet and never get worn? Or are you going to wear them every day to work and is it going to be a purchase that really pays for itself?
Where you also have a refreshing take on emergencies. And this is one of the old rules is, I gotta have an emergency fund. And I have been railing against that for a long time. But I think what you do so effectively here is you move past the generic emergency fund advice and you have people write out their fears. Like, what are you actually trying to protect against? Tell us more about that approach.
Yeah, well, on the YOLO thing, actually, Bruce, I don't believe that you've never made a YOLO purchase. I don't know.
Oh, no, I've totally made a YOLO.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding me? 100%. 100%.
Okay. Yes. Okay, good. Because I'm like, it doesn't matter what generation you are.
My YOLO purchases are more than $100 for the record. Like, I think that is a very, very low bar. I didn't buy Taylor Swift tickets, but, you know, I can play with the big folks on that.
I think for emergencies is like this idea of transparency, right? Like, I think that things are so much scarier when you don't know what you're dealing with. Like, when you're imagining this, like, situation, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I start spiraling if I don't write it down. Like, I'll be like, what if I lose my job? And then I'm like,
so relatable.
No, if I lose my job, then I can't pay rent, then I can't pay utilities, then I can't, you know, I don't know, afford anything. And so I think it's better to take stock of what you have, because that's not what's actually going to happen, right? Because I have savings and I've prepared for the situation if it comes to pass. I hope not. to my bosses at the Wall Street Journal listening to Bruce's podcast.
I'll send a note on your behalf. Don't you worry.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And so I think that writing out your fears and then crossing out the ones that are just fears and not reality is really important. Like narrowing down, like, what problem am I actually trying to solve here? And we have this thing called a worry list, which, like, you know, it's straight from my neurotic psyche, which is like, write out all your worries and then cross out the ones that aren't real.
Right, right. You also include something very practical that you call the order of operations. And because, you know, most people, it's just the emergency fund. You actually know there's a bunch of steps before that. The first one you list is negotiation. What do you mean by that? There's more within people's circle of influence than they think.
Yeah, I'm going to throw it over to Julia for this one after I mention one thing. This is actually a section she wrote. So one of the things that I think is really underrated, you're right, is negotiation. One of the first stories I wrote in journalism that was a big internet hit of the 2000s is I interviewed a hostage negotiator. He has like a masterclass and a book and all this stuff now. I asked him how I could get paid more because that's what I was interested in at the time. So I asked this hostage negotiator, his name is, he has like a whole firm. His name is like Chris Scrubs, I think. He has a master class.
Oh my God.
I'm going to look him up.
I love this story.
Yeah. He's
While like, Julia answers it, you look it up.
Yes. Yeah, cause I'm very invested now. I'm very invested.
Okay. You go
no,
first,
this was a tip that I think people kind of balk at because there's certain things that they think are very firm, you know, working with your landlord, for example, talking to your veterinarian. And there are a lot of different, I even had a friend who negotiated with his student loan servicer, which I was so impressed by when he told me this. There's so many things that when you are in emergency mode, you are just kind of doom and glooming yourself. And you're like, well, it's gonna be expensive. It's gonna cost a lot of money. I'm not gonna be able to afford it. And what we're trying to do with the order of operations is give you back some of that control to sort of allow yourself to work through this process and see that you actually do have more control in an emergency than you maybe have expected to have. And one of those things is negotiation. I think, especially in the pandemic, a lot of people found that their landlords were able to work with them when they were scared about paying rent, scared about moving, scared about negotiating their leases, and they were able to work with them. My friend with the student loan servicer, he called his student loan servicer and said, I'm not going to be able to make this payment. What do you recommend I do? And they were able to work out a payment plan that was much more feasible for him and his budget. So there's way more opportunities for you to try and find something that works for you. And the worst thing is they say no. That's always the thing they say in negotiation, right? The worst thing is that they say no, and at least you know you've tried it. But there's a lot of wiggle room in places if you just ask for it.
We only have a minute left, Julia. I'm giving this last question to you, and that is you have something called the Financial Self-Care Day, which I've never heard of. I think it's genius. And you actually outline, like, I'm waking up at this time. This is what I'm doing. At 10 a.m., I'm doing this. At 3 p.m., I'm doing this. Give us a very brief flavor of what that day looks like and how you made it look sound so fun. Like, I kind of want to hang out on your self-care day.
Thank you for the compliment. This is something that Beret and I are both really passionate about, thinking of your financial health as self-care and as wellness for you, instead of just thinking about it as a chore or something that's going to drain you and sap you of energy, which sometimes it will. Nobody likes to pay bills. But on my financial self-care day, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm gifting myself the little things that make it easier, you know, making an at-home latte, giving myself a lazy morning, and then going through and checking my accounts so that I have the scope of numbers ahead of me before I actually have to act on any of these things. So seeing how much I have in savings, giving myself a pat on the back for even having savings.
Talking to myself in a sing-songy voice like this.
No, literally, all of these different things that make it so much more palatable. I think it doesn't have to be painful. Yes, some of these things aren't fun, but it doesn't have to be painful. There's a lot of opportunity for celebration and rewarding yourself here as well.
Right. It's great. I think it's new thinking, and that is uncommon in this area.
Thank you.
And so I'm grateful you both joined
us.
Thank you. Julia Carpenter, Beret Lam are the co-authors of The New Rules of Money. It's a book from the Wall Street Journal. They joined us from New York. Coming up, how much does it cost to own a car. Matt Hans is VP of insurance at RateHub.ca, and he's going to take it through all the different elements, including one underappreciated cost that you're probably not really aware of. You don't know the number in your head, and you should. Depreciation. Now, a non-car note, if you like the daily lifestyle shows, which I do, you're in luck. Well, I don't know if you're in luck. I'm in luck because I get to do it. I'm the money columnist for CityLine. It is the longest running daytime show in North America, hosted by Tracy Moore. She is a delight. And you can watch the show live. You can also go to their website at cityline.tv. And I just did a segment on finances and divorce. And we had a good time talking about it, despite the subject matter. Moolala Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. We have seen how high inflation is affecting our day-to-day lives everywhere, from buying groceries to owning a home and buying, leasing, maintaining a car. Today, we're going to talk about cars. When it comes to buying one, owning one, maintaining one, there are so many different expenses that you need to take into account. So how much does it cost on average to own a car in Canada? Our guest is Matt Hans. He is VP of insurance for RateHub.ca, and he joins us from London, Ontario. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce.
All right, smack me with the number right off the top. What is the average cost in Canada?
So the average cost in Canada, based on our analysis, was around $1,300. So $1,387 to be correct.
Per
month. Sorry.
$1,387 a month.
Yeah, that would be great if it was per year.
I know. Yes, I was going to say, super cheap. And what goes in? What are the buckets? What are the parts of that car?
For sure. So when we looked at this, is a few different things. So, I mean, the bulk of that is your car payment, which we've broken down the car payment into really two sections, which is the interest portion. And then there's the payment on the actual principal. But we also look at that as depreciation, because you are paying your principal back. You're paying a lot of interest on top of that, but it's weird. It's different. It's not like your home where you're paying down your mortgage, you're building up an asset. This is great. You know, we know a lot of people make money in the real estate market. That doesn't happen in the auto side. You're paying for a depreciating asset. So even though you're paying off the principal on your loan, that the value of that vehicle is depreciating over time. So, you know, we calculated that as part of the overall a calculation as well. On top of that, we're looking at administration fees. We're looking at maintenance fees. So, you know, doing your regular oil upkeep or, you know, tire rotation. We're looking at your car insurance, which, as we've talked about in the past, is a growing cost for all Canadians. Gas, and then parking, which, depending on your situation, you may or may not need.
Mm. So if we look at that $1,300 a month, break out that depreciation cost for us, because it is very rare that people clock that. And while they know intellectually or logically that when they go to sell their car in 5 years or 10 years or for, you know, to the junkyard for $50, they know that the revenue they'll get from that sale is less than what they paid for it. I don't think they have a way to kind of clock that number. So of that $1,300, how much are you applying to depreciation?
We had it at 592, which is about 42.7% of that monthly payment, which is huge.
And over what time horizon did you do that depreciation calculation?
Because
I'm driving my car into the ground.
That, I believe, and I'm just trying to go back in my notes again, I believe that was over a standard loan payment. And I think the example I used was 8 years. I'm just trying to...
8 years or so, right. So yeah, probably a higher number than for me, because my car is more than 10 years old and I'm going to drive it into the ground. But I bet as you were doing the math, you weren't dealing with people like me. You were dealing with other people who they tend to turn cars more quickly than I do.
For sure. Yeah, that's the key, is that I think it's that people just need to be, it's not a number that, I mean, it is frightening when you look at it, but it's a number to me. It's like, it's the cost of owning a car. It is what it is. It's not something you can really change. It's really just being aware of that. So Bruce, if it's someone like yourself that, and even myself, I tend to own cars for 10 to 12 years and make sure I'm getting my value out of them. And then the reason why I get rid of them is because they're no longer worth repairing.
Yeah.
To me, it's, I understand the appreciation part of it, but I'm getting the use out of the car. I'm enjoying it. But like you said, for people trying to flip cars, you're not going to make a lot of money out of here. And if you're going to look to change your and to get a new car in a couple of years, you're probably rolling your loan into each other and you're just compounding the issues. You're not only are you paying more interest, you know, you're losing money on the depreciation of the vehicle when you go around to get your next car.
And of course, you're talking about an average here. There are people for whom that depreciation cost is lower because they're buying a Kia, and people whose depreciation is higher because they're buying a Porsche.
that's definitely the case too. And I mean, there are obviously there's always like things that are outside the norm. I mean, we saw during the pandemic, for like the first time I can really think in history, where used cars were selling at higher prices than some new cars because people wanted a car today and they were willing to pay for a car that was a year or two old a little bit more than a brand new car because they could get it tomorrow.
So $1,300 is the total, around $510 is the depreciation. What's the average amount that you're factoring in for insurance? And if it's an average, you've probably got 18-year-old drivers in there who are on the family plan, and then you've got 65-year-old drivers whose insurance would be much lower.
And that's the hard part when I look at that, because the insurance number feels admittedly to me quite low, but it's factoring in Canada wide and all types of drivers. So we had it around $111, $120. But I mean, to me, I pay more than that. And I know a lot of people that pay more than that. I know some people that pay less than that. And really, because insurance is very situational and we're accounting for all of Canada, that's why the number is so low. But, you know, if you're someone looking at this at our article going, well, I live in Toronto, I pay a lot more than that. Well, of course, yeah, you would. You'll pay the average price in Toronto is significantly higher. You're looking upwards of 180 to 200. And even then, you're probably accounting for parking and additional fees on top of that. So really, this total cost of ownership of a car, I know we're giving you an average perspective, but it's really situational and regional based too, that it can really swing the numbers.
You include a line item for car administrative fees. What's that?
So that really can change by province. But I mean, in Ontario, a lot of our administrative fees have been gotten rid of. But, you know, the cost to get your license renewal each year, like the sticker, the license plate sticker, some provinces still charge for that. So our writer, kind of when researching it, kind of took a perspective across Canada and applied an amount that he thought was fair. But once again, this is going to be very situational. There might not be administrative fees regularly that will affect you.
How did your writer factor in maintenance? Because boy, as a long-term car owner, I see in the first 4 or 5 years, there's maintenance, but it's not that significant. And then as you get to 8 or 9, it's air conditioning. It's a transmission. It's like, you know, a $5,000 bill is not unheard of. So it is not a straight line.
Yeah. And a lot of that came from Statistics Canada, which it said the average Canadian household spends about $79 per month to maintain and repair a vehicle. So that's kind of really where the starting point came from. excuse me. And then it said, I think that we looked in and we said, typically, at least the first 3 years of a vehicle are covered under warranty. That's about 60,000 kilometers. You can get longer than that. And then they were looking into things like oil changes, which at a cost at about $120 every 3 to 6 months. So they were kind of working that all together. And then they came up with about a rough idea of about $100 a month. They say that we should be setting aside to cover for any maintenance costs that could arise.
$1,300 a month. What are some ways that one can be below the average in terms of that monthly cost?
For sure. So, I mean, first and foremost, if you're not buying new, because the average price of a new car was really where I saw this. If we were looking at from last year's analysis to this year, it was the cost of the cars themselves. I've just grown significantly, even year over year, you know, with the average car this year being upwards of $67,817. And this was data pulled from based on September 2023 from Auto Trader. So ways to save. I mean, new car, used cars are about half the price right there. So if you're buying used, you're going to save there. And it's the type of car you're buying too. So we were talking earlier about, you know, is this a Camry or is this a BMW? If you're buying like a Toyota Camry, it's going to be a lot less. Your payments are going to be lower. So to me, it's really it's spending within your means. It's, you know, do you need the car? What are you using it for? And that's kind of ways you can also save on your insurance. You could shop around to find the lowest rate. And then you could look at, and if it's really, you know, if you're just using the car on situational instances and it's not something you need on a regular basis, you could look at something like pay-as-you-go insurance, which can be like your cheapest option provided by CAA. And that could be another way to kind of lower your monthly fees and cut down on that insurance cost.
I made a note for myself as you were speaking, and I now need to go and pull out my insurance policy and see when the last time it was that I did the research and shopped around on the price, because like so many of us, I get lulled into the auto renewal. It's always the same. Yes. I don't pay much attention to it. But I think you would argue that that is not a expense you just want to pay for without some thought.
No, it's something very much, at least in your control. You have the ability to shop around. I think far too many of us just set it and forget it. I know I'm a victim of it in the past. It's so easy to do. You know you need to have insurance. None of us like paying for it, especially auto insurance. But it's a necessary evil. But what we can do is shop around, and because insurance is so individualistic and it's constantly changing and evolving to the current market conditions. And right now in Ontario, we're seeing unprecedented levels of theft, which is leading to increases in what we're paying monthly. On top of that, we have inflation, but what you can do is shop around, because every insurance company rates a little bit differently. They're constantly looking at ways to manage their book, and they're changing what type of customer they want and willing to offer better pricing to. So if you're not taking, you know, a day each year to kind of shop the market, you're doing yourself a big disservice, because you could be leaving money on the table.
$1,300 a month. That's a big number, Matt. And that's just the average. Thank you for providing the context on it. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Matt Hans is the VP of Insurance for RateHub.ca. He joined us to talk about the average cost to own a car in Canada. It's higher than I thought. And now I have homework. Thanks, Matt. Get on that and do that. That is our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to find out more about this program, head to moolala.ca. There's a link to prior segments. You can also send us emails if you want to reach out for any reason. Our email address is ask@moolala.ca. Subscribe to the show on any of the podcast platforms and leave us a review while you're there. On social, I'm @BruceSelry on X, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook. Thanks for listening and have a great day.